This is our third session in the Lights of Musar Shir series. We've done two shiurim from Rav Yosef Leib Bloch, the late Telzer Rav in Rosh Hashiva, and we discussed them at some length in the last 2 weeks. And this week, today is the 18th of Shvat, Chai Shvat, 29th of January. And now what I'd like to do is move to some of the thought of Rabbi Rucham Levovitz, the great Rabbi Rucham Levovitz, the Mashgiach of the Mir Yeshiva in Lithuania. And in order to give it enough time, I want to start on Purim. Now, I did find that in the last two sessions I was a little bit rushed because I was trying to work from the text and explain things fully, so we were a little rushed. So I figured we have about a month till Purim. Good to start now. And hopefully things will be clear. Let me just give you a little bit of context. I'm actually very excited to be studying Rabbi Rucham's works. Rabbi Rucham Levovitz was, as I said, a mashgiach. Mashgiach was a spiritual guide in the yeshiva. They often had, in addition to the Rosh Yeshiva, as they do still today, a mashgiach, who often his primary role would be to give what they would call shmuzin, sermons, sichot in Ivrit. Rabbi Rucham was an astounding figure in the European yeshivas. The greatest minds, famous Rashi yeshiva and Rabbanim, and figures who many of whom you've heard of, studied under him and were absolutely in awe of him. And you have to realize these are people who are not easily taken, people who would readily question, argue, show counterproofs. Rabbi Rucham had a power, first of all, the credibility of the things he said, the power of his insight into people. I'm not here to be a storyteller. I want to learn, so I'm not going to get into stories about him, but real stories. It happens to be the writings that you see in front of you, I believe, were written by my Rosh Hashiva, Rav Zalig Epstein Zatzal, who passed away a few years ago, who was a very close disciple of Rabbi Rucham. He actually was hired when he was a student in yeshiva to write up Rabbi Rucham's shmuzin, and these were written by him, and some of the others were written by other Talmidim, Rav Leib Malin, who was a famous Rosh Hashiva of Beis HaTalmud for many years. These were very great people in their intellect and their character, and they were all extremely taken with Rabbi Rucham, which tells us something about him. Rabbi Rucham is a link in the chain from Rabbi Yisrael Salanter's Musar, and in many ways he opens it up for us in, to a degree we wouldn't have otherwise. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter was very cryptic, did not write a lot. If you study Or Yisrael or his letters, sometimes it's hard to know what he's referring to. He gives straight Musar, sometimes without the elaboration. Rabbi Rucham elaborates a lot. Even Rabbi Rucham's Musar is often hard to understand. The difference between Musar and general Chachma learning is that Chachma is intellectual. It's understanding a concept. How does this law on Shabbos work? You analyze the sources, you see what the different Rishonim say, you ask questions, you come up with answers. Anything in Agoda, in Musar, has a lot to do with feeling as well, and is much harder, therefore, to put in words. And in fact, I remember Rav Zalig Epstein once said, when he was speaking on Rabbi Rucham's Yartzeit, I may have quoted this, that when they, the students, first heard his words, they couldn't understand what he was saying. They could not understand what the point, I can repeat what he said, but what he means by that, what the point of it is, they couldn't understand it. Then they would mull it over and talk about it and think it through. Then they would grasp it to the degree that they can't understand what they didn't understand in the first place. And he explained why that is, because what Musar is, and especially the emphasis in Rabbi Rucham's Musar, is really what all the Torah is teaching man what he is. The Torah is about man. It's been said, I don't know who said it first, that other religions were invented by man to define God. Judaism was created by God to define man. Ultimately, our primary interest is to understand what we are supposed to do. It's not my job to figure out what God is. He's inscrutable. He's unknowable. We relate to certain Kabbalistic concepts, which are a vestige of a vestige. But ultimately, it's about what am I supposed to do in service of him, not what is he. So the Torah is, and Musar is, about figuring out what man is. There's a famous quote from Rabbi Rucham that comes up in this Sefer, that ultimately, if a person is studying Torah and he's looked in the commentaries and doesn't understand it and still can't work it out, ultimately he should find the answer in himself. What that means is, because the Torah is about man, if you really look into man's soul, you find what the Torah is talking about. That is not an easy process, and it requires a lot of chachmah, but that's what he said. Ultimately, the greatest commentator, the greatest commentary is man himself. So much, much of Rabbi Rucham's thought is about looking into man, using the Torah as a lens to see into what man is, see how the mitzvahs pull out of man, what he's supposed to be, and so on and so forth. What I'm holding here, nowadays these Musar works are published in a collection called Das Chachma Musar. This is a 6 or 7 volume set. The first volume has Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. The next 2 volumes has the writings of Rav Simcha Zissel Ziv, who was known as the Altar of Kelm. He was one of the 3 main disciples of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. Rabbi Rucham is a student of his. He quotes him frequently. So it's Rabbi Yisrael Salanter's Musar being unpacked and expounded upon for us. And in many ways, Rabbi Rucham spoke more, and we have more recorded. Even though this is only a drop in the bucket, this is from 2 years. This volume, this is the 4th volume in the set called Das Chacham Musar. If you look on the title page, this is from sermons he gave Bishnos Tufresh Tzadi Dal Tufresh Tzadi Hetz, 1934-1935. This is just a drop in the bucket, and a lot of it we don't have recorded. It wasn't written down. But even so, there's plenty here. Here we also have a say from his on Chumash. He also gave different types of Musa too. It's my understanding that in the Mir Yeshiva they had the boys who had been in Yeshiva for more years, and then they had like the out-of-towners. People came over from America, from other places, who were not as trained, and he knew how to address different people at their level. You'll see in his writings on Chumash, there are many ideas that are simpler. This volume particularly happens to be much more, I would say, difficult and needs a lot more work to understand. So you see his writings and his thought appears in different levels, but it's very deep, very meaningful, and it really, as I said before, unpacks what the Torah is talking about and how it relates to us. I just mentioned one vignette that appears in the beginning of this volume. I quoted it in Shul one time. In the introduction to this volume of Rabbi Rucham's sermons, they record, I think this is by his sons, that when he said a eulogy for the Chafetz Chaim, he actually was Mashgiach in the Radin Yeshiva, in the Chafetz Chaim's Yeshiva for some time also. For some reason, the Bali Musar moved around. In this Yeshiva, then they were in that Yeshiva, and they came back. But anyway, so he had been a Mashgiach in Radin as well, in the Chafetz Chaim's Yeshiva. So for some reason, it came up in his eulogy about the Chafetz Chaim. And by the way, for those who went on our Kivrei Tzadikim tour a couple of years ago to Queens and Brooklyn, the Chafetz Chaim's Rebbetzin is buried. And right next to her is Rabbi Rucham's Rebbetzin. They're buried right next to each other in the cemetery on the Queens-Brooklyn border. We were there, and a lot of other great people right nearby. The men are buried. That's a longer trip to get to where the men are buried, but the women made it over to the United States, and they're buried here in America. So we were out there.
Where are the men buried?
In Lithuania. So that's a longer
Coffee
trip.
Time,
yeah. The wives outlived them. The wives outlived them.
They wanted to be buried with the husbands.
They outlived them, and they came over to America. They were running away from Europe. She was a Breuder. But anyway, so he tells a little vignette here that when he came to Kelm, the great Musar Yeshiva in Kelm, he had only just arrived, and soon afterward, Rav Simcha Zissel, who was known as the Altar of Kelm, passed away. And this is on page 6 in this volume. He says, I'm going to reveal to you something that I never spoke about anywhere else, is what he said at the eulogy for the Chafetz Chaim. He says, when I was a young boy, I came to Kelm, a simple yeshiva bacher, and I had only just begun to hear the insights of Hagon HaChassid of Simcha Zissel, the great altar of Kelm, and shortly thereafter he passed away. And he says, I, in my bitterness, I went behind the wall. Apparently, you know, they had the coffin out. He went to the other side of the wall. And he said, and he was standing there and crying bitterly the whole day. He said, I couldn't eat, I couldn't drink. And he says, I remember what I was saying to myself. I'll read the way he read today. Ach, rak zachisi lahaskel lahavin mahu adam. I've only just begun to merit to understand what man is. Umahena chiyuvav, and what are his obligations. Ach, rak nifkechu einai. My eyes have just opened. Bishami dvarecha. In hearing your words, pa'am sfurim, a number of times, a small number of times, v'hina nistalakta mimena, behold, you were taken from me. He says, I stood that way crying the whole day, and he says, argish kol yama, I feel my whole life, that whatever I merited to understand in Torah, I got from those moments. Whatever he got, okay? If God has given me the ability to understand or grasp something, it's from that. Amazing vignette. And so, this is from, and by the way, I've been learning this with the men's Musa group every morning for 15 minutes, 6 days a week for a good number of months now. And, it's quite a limud, quite a study. So I wanted to share with you a piece of his on Purim. Purim's coming up. This is, as I said last week, it's as much machshava as Musa. The reason the Musa movement was that they made such an intense practice out of it. But basically what was happening in Musa sermons was insights into the Torah, that whether you were a proponent or an opponent of the active Musa movement, the insights, of course, were very worthy. So here we go. This is Maimar Chof Ches. It's in the bottom of the page Ayin Beis there. And this each Maimar, each sermon is dated. This was said on Purim. So here we go. I'll read it inside. Muva, it is cited. That means, is in yeshivis we say brought. But in proper English, I was taught you're supposed to say cited. It is cited, and he writes in parentheses, Ayin Shlach, Chelak Torah Shabbaksav, Parshat Savat, Rushen, Parshat Zachar. The Shalah HaKadosh, that stands for the Shnei Luchos HaBris, is a deeply Kabbalistic Sefer from one of the very early Achronim, Rev Horowitz. You may have heard of the Shalah HaKadosh. He's called by the name of his Sefer, but he explains certain concepts about the Torah, often in a mystical way, sometimes not. But many of the deep concepts we have about the Torah ultimately trace back to the Shalah. So it is cited in the name of the Shalah, B'Shem HaRizal, he quoting the Arizal, the Yom Kippurim, what do we call the Day of Atonement? Yom Kippur, as it's called in the Torah. Perusho, its explanation is Kippurim. You may have heard this idea in the past, that Yom HaKippurim is Kippurim. It's like Purim, even though Purim only happened later. And Yom HaKippurim is discussed in the Torah, obviously, earlier than the Purim story. But everything in the Torah, of course, is with the divine inspiration. And therefore, and it's God-given. And therefore, it can be telling us something that will happen in the future. So it's not by coincidence that Yom HaKippurim, Kippurim can mean like Purim. Hainu, that is, Shiyom Kippur hu me'ein Purim. That Yom Kippur is only me'ein, means like a vestige of. It's a smaller version of Purim. How's that for a shocking statement? Yom Kippur is just a smaller version of Purim.
Wow.
I know you're going through in your head. This is the way I picture Purim, this is the way I picture Yom Kippur. Not seeing it just yet. Okay, so it's going to need some elaboration. By the way, I want to mention what the Shlach HaKadosh, I believe what he's talking about there. And this is an interesting concept in general. It's a little bit mystical. There is a concept that we find in Svarim, the Ramban, in discussing, that's Rabbeinu Moshe ben Nachman, Nachmanides, in discussing the service in Yom Kippur, talks about this concept, and the way we sometimes call it in yeshivas today is throwing a bone to the Satan, which is we have, God sets up the system that there's a malach, there's an angel who prosecutes against us, we have a defense attorney. The prosecutor's job is to prosecute, to speak against us. There is such a concept as giving him something he wants, like to placate him, and then we get by scot-free. The idea of the Sa'ir La'azazel, you know, those two goats on Yom Kippur, the one that goes La'azazel, it's a fascinating concept. In fact, it's so esoteric that some of the commentators on the Chumash don't want to speak about it explicitly. This is a fascinating thing that if you look in the Ibn Ezra, the great Ibn Ezra, the classic commentary on that pasuk, he writes, there's a secret here, and when you'll be 33, I'll tell it to you. So, what's he talking about? So the Ramban writes, the Ibn Ezra hid it, and I'll reveal it. He's talking about 33 psukim later. There's a pasuk that says that you should not offer offerings to Seirim, which are Shadim, which are like other forces. So he's saying this is a concept related to that. Other forces that want to start up with the Jewish people, we sort of buy them off. Not God forbid serving them, that's what is our, but we sort of pay them off, and then they stop starting up with us, and then we have a clear atonement. So the idea of the Sar Lazazel has to do with that. And the Shloha HaKadosh there talks about just like you sort of bribe the Satan on Yom Kippur, you give him that Sayer. What happens in the Purim story? Haman has it in for the Jews. The great Jewess, who's our heroine, Esther, invites him to a party. She pays him, she sort of butters him up. She placates him with the party. It's the same, at a deeper level, it's the same concept. There's a concept of our Aveira's going off with the Sar Lazazel. It's like you pull a switch. What was the switch in the Purim story? The gallows was constructed for Mordechai. Who ends up on it? Haman. There are these deep parallels. So that's what the Shloha HaKadosh is talking about. And in that context, he talks about, you see, there's a connection between Purim and Yom HaKippurim. Yom HaKippurim is only like Purim. So he says, third line now, V'zohi he'ara maspika lana. This would be a sufficient point for us, b'chadei sh'neida erko shel Purim. In other words, without even going any further, if the holy day, Yom Kippur, can be called just a day that's like Purim, that should be a sufficiently rousing point to make us realize just how dear and how valuable and how spiritual the day of Purim is. If Yom Kippur can only be called like Purim, that tells you something about the greatness of Purim. But we're going to go further than that and try to understand how. Atzmuso, the bottom line now, Shayom Kippurim, the essence, we say etzem means the very thing, like etzem means the bone, the core of something. Atzmuso, the very essence, the very self of the day of Yom Kippurim, hu yom slichu mechila. It's a day of forgiveness. She'ein bo lo kina velo sina velo sacharus. That's a phrase that our sages use about the world to come and about angels, where there is no jealousy and no hatred and no like competition, and no clashing. It's a day of complete peace and goodness. V'sholetus bo ahava achva v'reyus. And what dominates on that day is love and fraternity and brotherhood. That's what Yom Kippur is supposed to be. We go around before we mochel everybody, and we're holy, and it's a day of pure purity. Biktara, in short, kol haram is batel biyom ze etzel ha'adam. In short, all bad, all evil is nullified on that day by man. All evil is nullified. Yom Kippur is that we do away with all bad. Everything's forgiven. Everybody's good. There's peace. All the bad traits are gone. Aj amru chazal, to the degree that our sages said, shekedushas hayom bikol kach gedola, to the degree that our sages say the holiness of the day is so great, ad shehayetzer atzmo mishapech latov, to the degree that the Yetzihara turns good. Imagine that. He turns around and becomes good. Shehasatan, that the satan, again, satan is a term we use for the prosecuting. And the word lahastin really means to inhibit, to be an impediment. The satan impedes what we're trying to be. You have in the Chumash, when the angel stands in the way of Bilam's donkey, it's a standing with lasitno, lasatan. Lasatan really means to be a blockage. The satan stops us from being what we need to be. But in any event, we use the term satan. So the satan, shehu hayetzahari, he's really alluding to a gemara. The gemara in Baba Basra says, the Satan is the Yetzirah, is the Malach HaMavos. He does all three jobs. He gets the person in trouble, then he brings testimony and prosecutes against him, and then he punishes him. It's all the same guy. He's like really bad. He's got three jobs, all of them really bad. So the Satan, which is the Yetzirah, on Yom Kippur, what happens? Ne'eseh praklet al ha'klal Yisrael, melamed z'chusalan. He becomes our defendant. He becomes our spokesman. He becomes our agent. He speaks on our behalf. The guy who usually works 100% against us turns around. So the Satan turns around in Yom Kippur. Kemo shemuva barash, as is cited in the Halacha commentary of Rabbeinu Asher, and people learn Gemara, in the back of the Gemara, one of the classic Rishonim major commentaries is what we call the Rush, Rabbeinu Asher. The Shulchan Aruch is based on the Rush, the Rif, and the Rambam. Those are the big three. So this is one of the major Mefarshim, major commentators. The Rush, in the commentary in the last parak of Yuma, quotes Mepirkei Derabbi Elazar, which is a form of Medrash. This is a quote. Now, Yesh lecha am echad kemalachei hasharis, that they come and the angels say before Hashem, you have a nation here that's like angels, and you're looking at us on Yom HaKippurim. We are like angels. Everything is good. The Yetzirah within man, the evil inclination within man, turns around on this day. Everything becomes good. Yeah.
Is the Yetzirah not there on Yom Kippur, or just manifests as good?
We're going to see. What he's going to talk about now is the difference between nullifying something, negating it, and turning it around to the other side. It's one thing to have an enemy and shoot him down. It's another thing to have an enemy and turn him around to your side. That's exactly what this... Obviously, this is the ideal level. It doesn't mean everybody achieves this, but this is what's supposed to happen on that day. This is giving us an insight what Yom Kippur is really supposed to be, and by extension, we'll see what Purim is really supposed to be. But we have to get there, okay? So now he quotes, V'ayin b'Ramban, this is what I told you before. Take a look at the Ramban. That's Rabbeinu Moshe ben Nachman, the commentary of the great Ramban on Chumash. B'veyor inyan sa'ir la'azazel, explaining the concept of the sa'ir la'azazel. That's what I was telling you before about you sort of knock out the sultan this way. Shal yedei kach, that by way of that service, hayetzer ne'esaf praklitam shel ha'kol Yisrael. The yetzer becomes like the advocate for Kol Yisrael. Ubitul hayetzer, now he's going to analyze this. The nullification of the yetzer, this is how you can see this is a very deep, these are deep concepts, and there's a lot to think about here, but I hope they give us an understanding of Yom Kippur and Purim. Ubitel hayetzer halazohi madregas la'asid lavo. I just have to make a disclaimer. I'm just giving this over the way it is. These were, most of those said to, he's assuming a lot of knowledge and a lot of background, and I'm trying to unpack it, but I'm not watering it down. These are his words. I'm trying not to water it down anyway. Ubitel hayetzer halazohi madregas la'asid lavo. The nullification of the yetzer is really the level of, loss of level means the future to come, meaning the messianic time. K'moshe kazeh haRamban b'parashas Nitzavim, as the Ramban writes, it's a famous piece in Parashas Nitzavim, al pasuk umol Hashem elokecha es levavcha es levav zarecha, famous pasuk in Nitzavim that talks about cutting away the impurity of the heart. Hashem will cut away the impurity of the heart. It's one of the psukim that's an allusion to Elul, es Levavcha, ve'es levav, starts with Elul, Aleph Lamed, Lamed. But the Ramban writes that Shel Asad Lavo Yia Bitul HaYetzer. In the future, there'll be a nullification of the Yetzahara. And he writes here, Ve'ayin Bedas Tevunos Laharam Chal. We're all familiar with Rav Moshe Chaim Litzato, the author of the Mesilas Yesharim, The Path of the Just. So he wrote many, many Kabbalistic Sfarim, but he wrote a few that are readable and understandable, although they're also very deep. One is the Derech Hashem, which I think you've studied. And another one is the Das Tvunos, which is a little bit even deeper, where he's talking about all kinds of deep concepts about how Hashem set up the world and so on. So he talks about what to find, the way the world started, Adam HaRishon, the giving of the Torah, sin, bringing man back to the state that he's supposed to be. So there he talks about what the ultimate goal is in bringing the world back to the times of Mashiach. So he tells us, if to really understand all this, you have to look in the Das Tvunos. But the concept that the ultimate goal is to bring the world back to a state of negating the Yetzirah. V'zeh she'anu machalkim inyan bitul hayetzer, says the Mashgiach, says Rabbi Yerucham Levovitz. This that we distinguish the concepts of nullification of the Yetzir. V'hishapchus hayetzer meira l'tov, and the turnabout of the Yetzihara from bad to good. Shelach ora halo achasi. Aren't they the same thing? I just gave it away. They're not. But it looks like the same thing. Negating the Yetzihara, making him good, meaning he should stop doing what he's doing, make him good. It would seem like they're the same thing. Uma marvichim anu. What do we gain by amreinu when we say shegam hayetzer yase tov? What do we gain? You know, as he's saying, if you look carefully, we use two different terms. We talk about negating the Yetzirah, and we talk about turning him around to good. What's the difference between using the different terminology? Isn't it all the same thing? Omnam be'emes gam ha-Yetzirah. There's a period there, but there shouldn't be. But the truth is also the Yetzirah, gam hu hin hu darga ba'adam. That is also a level in man. What he means is, everything's there for a purpose. If something is there only to be negated, it doesn't really have a purpose. If it's there and has a purpose, it means it has to be a positive purpose, not just to knock him out. So, ve'ein ze davar tzadi, it's not something peripheral, it's not something on the side. Uva Adam Harishon Shayagam Kain Bitul Hayetzer. We say that Adam Harishon before the sin, the original Adam before he sinned, didn't really have the Yetzirah within him. Afal Pikain Lo Ne'ese Hayetzer Tov. But you can't say that at that state of being the Yetzirah was good. It might have been not in him, it might have been negated or pushed out, but you can't say it was good. Sharei Adam Harishon Chata. Ultimately, the Yetzer did get him to sin. The way that, to oversimplify a little bit, the way the Svarim talk about what was the state of Adam before the sin of the eating from the tree and after, is that beforehand, the Yetzer was like something external to him, like something you would meet walking down the street, but not something that's part of your, I don't know what the psychologists say, id?
Are we
going
with Yetzer?
Huh? We live after Adam. He's talking about what was
then.
Yeah, before. So Adam originally didn't have the Yetzer as part of himself, but it was something that he could encounter. And when he encountered it, he fell into sin. Then it became mixed into his being. We feel the Yetzer as part of our own identity, that we struggle internally. It's not an external foe. It's an internal foe that we struggle with. That happened. That mixing happened by the sin of Adam Harishon. What the Mashkiach here is pointing out, though, is even before the sin, though, the Yetzirah hadn't turned to good. If the Yetzirah had turned to good, he would never have brought Adam to sin, right? So you can't say the Yetzirah was good. Sharei Adam Harishon Chota, for behold, he sinned. V'hu mishum, that's because, shegam v'Adam Harishon haya heder v'chisaron, v'lo haya b'shleimuso. There was still something lacking. There was still something missing. It was not complete. V'ayin b'das tunas. Again, he says to understand, you have to really look at the das tunas. What he's saying is, the fact that the Yetzirah has been nixed or knocked out, that doesn't make him good. That just makes him, you know, you put him in the penalty box. You knocked him out of commission, but you haven't made him good. There's still a susceptibility. When have we reached the full tikkun? When has it reached its full completion? Is when the Yetzirah has actually been turned to something good. So clearly the latter is a higher level than the former. Ulefize, and according to that, Tzarech Lomar, one has to say, Shezeh Shekosav HaRamban, this that the Ramban writes in his commentary in Nitzavim, Shela Asad Lovet in the future, meaning the Messianic time, Yiyeh Kemo Adam Harishon Kodem HaChet, it will be like Adam Harishon before the sin. This is an idea you may have encountered in many Svarim, that we're supposed to get back to the state of Adam Harishon before the sin. Says the Mashkiach, Kavanaso Shiya Od Yoser Mi Adam Harishon. Actually, it means greater than, because Adam Harishon before the sin was still susceptible to sin. We're talking about such a level that you've totally turned the Yetzirah around that he can't do bad. Shayu Shleimim Lagamri, that they'll be absolutely complete. Uv Madregas Yom HaKippurim, when we talk about the level that the Yom Kippur is supposed to be, Amru Chazal, Chazal, our sages say, Shayom Agarim, Shayom Zayyeh Bitul Hayetzer. The day is supposed to cause that there'll be a nullification of the Yetzirah, Shayetzahara Yishapech Lato, that the goal is that he should turn around to good, Sharei Nepachu Mimastin Lasanega, because he turns around from a mastin, which again means a blocker, an impeder, a problem, to Sanegar, to an advocate, right? That's what happens on Yom Kippur, is that the rest of the year he's against us. On Yom Kippur, he advocates for us. In fact, the gematria of Ha Satan is 305 and 59 is 364. Ooh. So the Svarim say because the Satan works 364 days a year. But one day he's off, one day he doesn't work, that's Yom Kippur. He'll ask me why I'm going with a solar year. That's because really, we do go with a solar year. I spoke about this in Shul at all. Our months are lunar, but our year is really solar because we do go with the seasons. So that we have to adjust it in order to make it fit. But really, the real idea of a Jewish year is solar. So therefore, the Satan works only 364 days a year, not 365. So hold on, we're just getting started. In case this wasn't sufficiently deep yet. V'kosav b'shem ha'arizal. And now it's written in the name of the Arizal, as we said a paragraph ago. She Yom Kippur, hu Kippurim. That what we call Yom Kippur is only like Purim. She inyano shel Purim, hu may inyano shel Yom Kippur. That the concept of Purim is really the same as Yom Kippur. So how's that so? Yesodo shel Purim, hu ahavas abrios. The foundational principle, the fundamental principle of Purim is Avas Abrios, means love among people. Shetisbatel, Hakina, Vehasina, that the jealousy should be nullified, hatred should be nullified. Virak, Ava, Vishalom, Yiyu, Shruyim, Yisrael. And just love and peace should dwell within Yisrael. Vizehu, Inyan, Mishloach, Manas, Ishlarehu. That's what Shalach Manas is all about. It's fraternity, brotherhood, goodness, benevolence. Okay, he's going to elaborate. Amrinan b'Gemara. We say in the Gemara, it's a Gemara in the first chapter of Tractate Megillah, that there were two great sages, Dehavu Machalfi Sudasayu Lahadadi, that they used to exchange their Purim meals with each other. That's the word. That's the term in the Gemara. They exchanged their Purim meals with each other. There's a discussion in the commentaries what that means. Does that mean one year he eats with him and the next year he eats with him? Does it mean that each year this family cooked up this stuff and this family cooked up that stuff and they just traded? The first interpretation is too novel. The second one is too simple. Because what's supposed to happen is that they thereby fulfilled Shalach Manos. So those who say it means that just this year you eat by me, next year I'll eat by you. So the question is, the first year, how did you fulfill Shalach Manos? You ate by me. So good, I'm feeding you, but you're not feeding me. But if, on the other hand, if it means that we traded, so then of course it's Shalach Manos. I sent you a meal, you sent me a meal. What would be novel? So the commentators grapple a little bit with what the Gemara means. Because of Rashi, but Rashi says, one of the interpretations I just said, Ze ochelim ze bepurim shel shanazu. This would eat with that one, meaning he would eat with him, his family, his family on this Purim, this year. Uvishni, and the next year, so it chaver imo. They had a rotating Purim meal. This year you by us, next year us by you, and back and forth. V'hikshu al ze. So that's Rashi. Rashi is the classic commentator. That's how Rashi explains the Gemara. So they ask the question on it, how did they fulfill Mishloach Manos that way? If I feed you, so I did Mishloach Manos, I gave you food, but how exactly did you fulfill Mishloach Manos? The assumption seems to be that that was the way they did it. Now, like today, we sent out 900 Shalach Manos to all of our best friends, and people were not as wealthy, and it was the Gemara is implying that this was it. So how exactly did they fulfill it? So v'chidesh boze habach. The bach is the bayis chadash. In the tour of Shulchan Aruch, before there was a Shulchan Aruch, there was the Arba'a Turim. He was the first one who divided all of Halach into the four sections, Arachayim, Yerdei, Chosh, and Mishpat, Eben Ezra. He's the son of the Rush, who we quoted before. He's the Baal HaTurim and Chumash. So he was the first one who divided halacha into these categories, which the Shulchan Aruch is based on. So in your tour, in the class, what we call the tour, it's the Arba'a Turim, because there's four sections. On one side is the Beis Yosef, written by Rav Yosef Karo, the Shulchan Aruch. On the other side is the Bayis Chadosh, written by Rav Yoel Sirkis. He was one of the great, great poskim. So he is one of the great and classic poskim. So v'chidesh bazeh habach, the Bayis Chadosh, the Bach, innovates something. He gives a novel interpretation as follows. And the Mashkiach is quoting this because it illustrates the extent of the concept that he's talking about. Shakevan shekol inyan mishloach manos. Since the whole concept of shalach manos, hu sheyehe sameach im ohava v'reyav, is that he should be happy and joyous with his friends and colleagues. Ulahashkin beinehem ahava achav v'reyas, and to make dwell among them love and brotherhood and fraternity. Im kain. If so, im yisod echad im chavero, if one dines with his friend, right? You have the Purim meal with your friend. Vireehu harehem chavero vireehu, with his friend and his colleague. Harehem besimcha uvetuv lev, and they are in joy and in good spirits. Mishta yachad, of the party together. Upturim hei me'ata michi of mishloach manos. Since we are experiencing Ava v'achva, brotherhood and love, therefore we're exempt from Mishloach Manos. The Bach is saying something radical. He's saying you can fulfill, this is a Musar Shir, not a Halacha Shir. Don't think you're getting off easy of Shloach Manos this way. But the Bach is saying that by eating at someone else's house, you fulfill Shloach Manos.
Wow.
How's that for money saving? Okay. Whether it's accepted, the Halacha is not for now. Now we're just, the Mashgiach.
Not the one who's providing the meal?
Huh? You know, yeah, that's his Kiddush. It's not just the one who's providing the meal, but the one who... You know, the goal of Mishloach Manos is this feeling, and therefore you don't have to be the one sending, you can be the one receiving also. Why you wouldn't just say that then automatically? I mean, he questions it. We're not here to have a full halachic discussion analyzing that, but the Mashgiach is citing it for the point that somebody could go so far as to say the emphasis of Mishloach Manos is so much to make ahava, that to make people be feel friendship, that you could even take it that far in halacha. It illustrates something. So me ikre hamitzvahu. In other words, he's quoting it because it shows you the extent of it. But whether you agree with that particular halacha contention, that interpretation of the Gemara or not, the general point is true anyway, that that's the goal of Mishloach Manos. Me ikre hamitzvah, from the core fundamental concepts of the mitzvah, who is sheyishlach, this is interesting, lemi sheyishlo tina ukpeda olav, to send it to somebody that he has some grievance against. Ukpeda means he's makbid about something, he's a stickler about something, he's upset about something. The Mashgiach is saying, particularly if he's unhappy with somebody, send him a Mishloach Manos. So that's, first of all, it's to negate a previous tension, personal tension. And v'chein sarach shtei manos, you also need two portions. Manos really means, yeah.
To send it to somebody who you have a grievance or they have a grievance.
Either way. He says it actually, the truth is he says it with pronouns. So I could say it either way. I'm not sure which one he meant it. But it would be true either way. The point is it negates that feeling.
Okay.
Seems like today it's like the opposite, what people do for Hakara Satov.
Yeah, I mean, that Hakara Satov also is good, but we shouldn't forget the main idea. Mm-hmm. The truth is some things get lost in magnitude. Mishloach Manos, the real mitzvah is to send one gift of two portions to one person. Ish the Rei Ehu. Today has to 900 people. We lose it a little bit. So here, that's why it's good to learn this. V'chein sarach shtei manos. You also need two portions. Davar chashuv, which means it's something significant. You have to understand that in halacha, a meal that is meant to be frugal and not honorable has one course. The meal you eat right before Tisha B'Av, it was Sudama Sekh, is supposed to only have one course. You're not supposed to have two courses there, right? We have an egg on bread and that's it. You don't have an egg on bread and a side order of tuna. It's supposed to be one thing. A meal that's festive in halacha is supposed to have two courses. You know, this is usually not an issue anyway, but a festive meal is supposed to have at least two courses. The idea of Mishloach Manos is you're giving somebody a Purim suit. The Purim meal is supposed to be festive. It should have two courses. So the two manos, two portions, are supposed to be for two courses. Now, you know, whether a lollipop and a gumdrop, what you were planning on serving. So again, sometimes it gets lost. Sometimes you can technically do the mitzvah, but it doesn't mean it has the full spirit of it. So we should try to do some that capture the idea more. By the way, Shnei Manos just means two portions. There's a myth out there, and there could be a custom like this, but the people think there have to be two different brachos. There's no such requirement. The Rambam gives us the classic Shalach Manos, two portions of meat. Meat is all shahakal, so it doesn't have to be two different brachos. I'm not sure where that concept came from. But anyway, you have to give them two portions and something significant. Bichdei sheyispayes. The word payes, the word appeasement in English comes from that. It means that somebody feels better, to appease somebody. She is payes, that he feels better, that he feels good. Uvmatanas levyonim daiba manachas. Interestingly, when it comes to one of the other mitzvahs of the day, which is to give gifts to the poor, there it's enough with one portion, lachol evyon. But in terms of the one that's geared not so much at helping the poor, but just creating brotherhood and fraternity and good feeling, goodwill, that requires two. The ani mispayas af b'manachas. When it comes to a poor person, even with one, he feels better. For your friend, you have to give something that's honorable to him. He's not a poor person, to make him feel better. So you give two things. Just showing you the general setup of the mitzvah is make the other person feel good and do it with dignity. Biktzara, in short, Sharshe mitzvahs elu, The roots of these mitzvahs, the Purim mitzvahs, are who it is, shetisra b'ha'ava, that ahava should increase. The yesoda shel Purim hu ahava v'achva. The foundation of Purim is love and brotherhood. U'be'emes nuchal lahargish zos b'chush. And the truth is, we can feel this with our senses. We can feel it ourselves. Shepurim mashpia shefa shel bracha l'haklal Yisrael. That Purim brings like an aura, a bounty of blessing to Klal Yisrael. Shavsa kinas ishmer ehu. That's like the word Shabbos. It puts an end to the jealousy of man to his friend. Butlu medonim bein achim. There's a nullification of quarrels among brothers. Yom haPurim hu macha kal kol zeh. The day of Purim is an erasure of all of this. Sometimes you see that. I've seen this myself. People, Purim is a good way of putting down tension, reinstating shalom, and so on. Ube'emes, and in truth, Yom HaKippurim hu rak me'ein Purim. Shocking as it may sound, Yom Kippur is only a me'ein. Again, me'ein means a micro version of. Like Shabbos is me'ein olam haba. It means a smaller trace of. We don't mean to reduce the standing of Yom Kippur in your eyes. We mean to build up Purim. Shehare Yom HaKippurim hu adayin makom kitru godol ba'ar hayetzer. Because Yom Kippur, there's still a big potential for prosecution for the Yetzer. Lamar to say, Kish, this is what he's going to claim against us. Okay, here we are in Yom Kippur. Everybody's wearing white. We're fasting. We're singing Nisana Tokef and whatever else. But the Yetzer can still prosecute against us and say, Kishaomdim kol hayom bebeis hamedrash, when they stand all day in shul, va'oskim batzvilu kedusha, and they're busy only with prayer and holiness. Ein ze pele, it's not such a wonder. Ein ze pele kol kach im einam chotim, it's not such a wonder if they're not sinning. All right, so yeah, he's in shul all day. What else are you going to do? Avol yinasuna liftoach hanu yoseyem velasok b'matzum matan. Well, the Yitzhar says, yeah, let's try it a different way. Let's have them try to open their stores and be involved in building. Yeah, go out to the marketplace. Visham lo tia kina v'sina b'nei. Very nice when you're standing in shul all holy and you see you live up to the role. But make it a regular day. Purim, there's no Isra Malacha. You can open your store. You can sell. Make it a regular day when they're buying things for their meals and so on. Then there should be no jealousy and no hatred. He puts in parentheses, El Hashem Machshavos Hashem Amku Ma'od, turning to the other side, V'hitim Dine Hayom L'Nyana D'Yoma. What he means parenthetically is, so you might ask, oh, so why not do that? So if Yom Kippur is supposed to be such a holy day, so why didn't Hashem make Yom Kippur a day when, in fact, we do demonstrate that even in the playing field of regular life we're holy? Because there are other factors. He had to synchronize. We'll have to im to umim are twins. It means when you make things fit. He had to line up to synchronize the laws of the day with the underlying concept. Yom Kippur, for other reasons, has to be a day when we're in shul and davening and doing all those things. It's not a day to be going around in the street. So there are other reasons why Yom Kippur has to be the way it is. But the fact remains that on Yom Kippur, the Yetzirah can say, or the Satan can say, look, this is no big wonder, not so impressive that they're free of strife and tension when they're all just standing in a spot in shul all day. What would you expect? Ma'alaso sheyom ha'purim hi, but the maila, the high level of the day of Purim is, shehu me'ein le'asid lavo, that it is a microcosm, a vestige of the future world, shemishave bo bitul ha'yetzer, that what happens, what develops on it, is a true nullification of the Yetzer. Afal pishu yom chol, even though it's a weekday. It's not a yom tif, it's not a day of like Yom Kippur. Yom shel achilu shesia, it's a day when we eat and drink. It's not like Yom Kippur when we're acting like angels. Umaso matan, it's a day when you can buy things. V'imkein, and if so, be'emes Yom HaKippurim eino kiyim ein purim. So then we're beginning to understand. Yom Kippur is actually only a trace of Purim. Ube'emes, and in truth, shekol achad yuchel lachosh zos me'atzma, who? Each person can feel this in himself. There's a style in Hebrew when you want to emphasize he himself, you say me'atzma, which means from himself, who? Like you say in English, he himself, a person himself can feel this. Listen to this shocking statement. Shemi mishloach manos hum mekabel to'elos yoser me'asher me'ha'al chayt. That he gets more benefit from shalach manos than from al chayt. V'halavai sha'al chayt lo yofug rosh ma'ad matzoy hayom. We're only so that the al chayt, its impression doesn't wear off by the evening. Remember once in yeshiva, in yeshivas, there's the Isman, the term goes through Yom Kippur, and then when Yom Kippur is over, it's vacation. So I remember once, we were in yeshiva on Yom Kippur, and Hashem, who are Elohim? People are screaming, it's the climax of Yom Kippur. But then, then we dive in Mar, and the car services were there, and everybody was gone. Like, half hour later, the whole thing was over. Not that anybody did anything wrong, but it's just amazing how quickly we go from this high to, all right, now what's the next thing? It's Sukkot's vacation, I'm gone. Not criticizing, but just we can feel it. You feel it flip very quickly. Very soon afterward, we're in a totally different state of being. So the Meshkei was saying, "Halavai, it should only be so that the alchet doesn't wear off by evening." Ba'od shemishloach manos after she yashpia alav al meshach shanim rabos, but mishloach manos, he says, can have a hashpah, an influence on him for many years. Somebody that had been tension, he used perm as an opportunity to reinstate a relationship, to make peace, that can be a lasting thing. Okay, so we're beginning to see how Yom Kippur is a trace of Purim, and how Purim in some ways can be greater. Again, we don't in any way mean to say you shouldn't take Yom Kippur seriously. We're just building up what Purim is. Dine ha-Purim kulam he-mi yusadim al-inyan zeh. All of the laws of Purim are based on this concept, shel ahava u-bitul hara, of love and nullification of bid. Kol ha-poshet yad nostin lo, there's a rule in Purim, even though generally in the laws of tzedakah we're supposed to make sure that the recipient is valid and it should be legitimate. There are gemaras about that and discussion in the laws of tzedakah about it. But on Purim there's a rule, anybody sticks out his hand, you give him. You just give out the money freely. It means anybody sticks out his hand, you give him. Yeah, we don't do investigations. If you can't find Jewish poor to receive money, give it to non-Jewish poor. Mishum darkei shalom, all the ways of peace. We're just looking to do just ava v'achva. It's all goodness. Mishum di yisod ha-purim hu yom shel bitul ha-yetzer mikol v'chol. We're trying to totally negate the yetzer. There shouldn't be any bad intention. V'zeu ma she'amru chazal, and this is what our sages mean. Chayiv Adam Livasume Bapuria Adlayoda Bain Aru Haman Lavarach Murachai. On Purim, we have this shocking statement that it says in the Gemara again what it means halachically, what it really means to this degree is a whole discussion, but at least in theory and concept, one should become inebriated on Purim to the degree that he doesn't know the difference between Aru Haman and Barach Murachai. What does that really mean? It happens to be the numerical value of cursed is Haman and blessed Mordechai are the same. Some say it just means till you can't do the math because you're a little tipsy. Some say there are muscles. It means if you drink a little more than usual and you fall asleep, so then you don't know there's an armor. All kinds of different interpretations. The Gemara right afterwards tells a story that Rabba and Reb Zeira had a Purim meal together, and Rabba got too drunk and he slaughtered Reb Zeira, and many Rishonim say that's a sign that he revived him afterward, and then he invited him the next year, and he said no thanks. But most Rishonim say that's trying to tell you that it shouldn't be taken to the fullest degree. But at least the way our sages articulated what we do on Purim, again, not that it means reckless drinking, but they articulate it as a person should drink till he doesn't know the difference between cursed is Haman and blessed is Mordechai. Why say it that way? What's the meaning of that? So the Mashgiach is saying very simply, the idea of Purim is not just there was a challenge and we were victorious, Hashem helped us. It's nullify evil. Evil switches to good. There's no more Arur Haman. There's no more cursed is Haman. You're turning, I don't know the difference between blessed is Mordechai and cursed is Haman because we've totally negated evil. That's what it means. Therefore, Chayiv Adam Levesume Bepuria Ad L'yada Ben Arur Haman Levarach Mordechai. Now, we have a question. V'ro'i levar lefize, it is appropriate to explain according to this, ech mat'im loze sha'ar dine ha-purim. How, again, the word mat'im means, it's a word we use when we talk about shiduchim. Are they mat'im? Do they fit? The tu'umim are twins. It means, how does it fit? How does it fit with this? How does it synchronize with this? The other laws of Purim, kegon kriyas ha-megillah, like reading of the Megillah, Umacho Timche, Macho Timche is the statement you should obliterate Amalek, Shiyasodam Hudafka Arur Haman, that their whole concept is cursed. What do we do? The whole Megillah. Ooh, every time we hear Haman, we're banging. It's and it's based on the kind. What do we read Shabbos before Purim? The mitzvah to obliterate Amalek. We're stamping on evil. We're crushing evil. We're speaking out against evil. You just told me that the idea of Purim is evil turns around to good. Drink till you don't know the difference. You can't even tell that Haman is cursed. But how does that fit with the rest of the picture? You read the Megillah. We're talking about how bad Haman is. Ish tsar va'oyev Haman haraza. Esther says at the climax of that evil Haman. The whole idea of the Megillah is underscoring just how evil Haman is. L'hashmid l'arug l'abed. He wanted to annihilate the Jewish people, men, women, and children. And we're emphasizing it. And it's really an outgrowth of the mitzvah to obliterate Amalek, which again we read about in Shabbos Zachar, which is the Shabbos before Purim. The Mashgiach is now asking a question. How does that fit with everything I just said? We just said, oh, there's no more evil. It's all good. How does that fit? V'zehu be'er hadvar. Okay, is that a good question? Seems like a good question. Okay, we just presented one picture of Purim, but now there's something that doesn't fit in. So this is the explanation. I'll probably have to do most of this next time, so not a bad stopping point, but we'll begin it. Purim hu bebechinas olam katan. Purim is a concept of a realm of a microcosm, a miniature universe. He doesn't just mean in space, he means in time. It's a microcosm of the time of the world. Kol ha-mestovev u-meshava ba-olam ha-godol b'shita alfe-shnin. Our sages talk about the 6,000 years. Everything that happens in the big world in the 6,000 years, tzarech shi-yishave b'purim, happens on Purim. You know, I think there's an audio recording, 6,000 years of Jewish history in 1 hour or something like that. So there you go. Purim is 6,000 years of history in one day. Okay, Purim is supposed to be a microcosm. By the way, a lot of the ideas that Mashgiach is talking about, he makes it sound like he's just presenting on his own. Many of them are Kabbalistic ideas that you find elsewhere. But Purim is supposed to be a microcosm of all that will transpire in the world. So, Issa b'Chazal, we have a teaching of Chazal. Olam hazeh domel apruzdor b'fnei olam ba, famous Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. This world is the hallway leading into the next world. Kol hala asad lava, all of what we call the future world, that eternal and lasting world. Bitel hayetzer, shayetzer mishach v'chatov, the nullification of the yetzahara, it turning around from bad to good. Kol ze yetze me olam hazeh. It all comes from this world. This is a deep idea. I mean, it's a simple idea. It's also a deep idea discussed in all of the Musa Svarim. Rabbi Ruchim has a particular emphasis on it in many of his sermons. There's an amazing thing about this world. It seems like such a place where there's evil and there's bad and there's all kinds of things. But all of the good of all of the higher realms can only be gotten here. In other words, this world can't be too bad if all of the other stuff is earned here. The only place to get Olam Haba is Olam Hazeh. In fact, he has a bunch of sermons at the beginning that seem to be addressing, there are people who think, oh, this is a dark world, a bad world. My mind is in Olam Haba. My mind is on cloud nine. He says, no, if God made it so that the way to earn all of those things is here, this world must not be too bad. Okay? So when our sages say this world is the hallway into Olam Haba, it means the only way to get to all of those wondrous things and all of them that we talk about and that all the prophets couldn't even imagine and so on, that's all from this world. Kemosha Amru, as our sages say on the Pasuk, Mi Yitain Tohar Mitame, who can make something pure come from impure? Our sages elaborate on that Pasuk and say, Olam Haba Me Olam Hazeh. It's uncanny. If a person has a philosophical type of mind, it's flimsy and poor and impure manufacturer, you don't expect the greatest product in the world. But somehow, what manufactures the world to come? This world. So, striking as it is, but this world is the only way to get to the next world. It's the only way to earn Olam Haba. Olam Hazehu Kulo Choshech. This world is all darkness. there's so much evil and it's confusing and so on and so forth. Olam haba kulo or, and the world to come is all light. That's a world where we understand everything, and everything that eludes us and frustrates us and pains us, it's all gone. Everything there is all clear. This world is all confusing. And yet, the only way to get to that light is from with this darkness. Dafka mechoshech olam hazeh yotze ha'or. Specifically, from the darkness of this world comes out the light. So we'll pick up with it next time. We'll see where he's going is Purim has to traverse the process of what happens in this world. Like a Wahabdil, a million separations, but like in a story where there's the beginning, and like the talking literature, rising tension, conflict resolution. So there's that trouble too. Person's put in Olam Hazeh, there's problems. There's Yetzirah, there's evil, there's things like, there's confusion, it's all bad. And then you overcome it and you turn it around, and then you merit to have the bad guy turns around, like in all the simple kid stories, the bad guy turns around, does tshuva and becomes good. Well, lahavdil, but that's what's supposed to happen. And if Purim is a microcosm of all of that, Purim has to start by building up evil. Yeah, you got to start Purim, and you got to depict Haman and all of his rishus and all his evil. And we're stamping him, hear his name, and we're upset. And you have to, first you have to develop and show exactly what evil is. Then you have to overcome evil, and only then can you turn it around and make it good. Purim has to go through all of those stages. We'll see how he explains it more in depth, Meretz Hashem, next time.
Wow.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Rabbi.